One of the most impressive things about Joe's presentation was that he knew what he was going to do with his life at age 13. I'm 43 and I'm still trying to figure it out. It's a mystery to me, so amazing. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners and the elders of the country that we're meeting on, particularly the Yagra people to the south of the river and the Turrbal people to the north, Noonuccal and Quandamooka over on Stradbroke Island. Also, I'd like to thank Shelley and Brisbane PFLAG for putting on such a fantastic event and for all of you guys for turning up over the weekend. It's great as a gay man to feel like we have the support from you guys. I'd also like to acknowledge people in the group that I've been working with on the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission inquiry, Karen, Una, Sharon, Shelley, obviously, and there might be others, I'm not sure if I've forgotten, but there's a number of us here who've been involved with the work that's currently underway. Okay, so just a little bit of background to the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission inquiry. So we take a few steps back, first of all. Law reform in this country in relation to gay, lesbian, bisexual and transgender issues has been underway in real terms since about the 1980s. And in most states and territories, there's been a significant amount of reform of their laws in relation to dealing with discriminatory matters. But however, we've seen almost no reform at the federal level during this period. A little bit of tinkering on the side, but no significant leaps forward. There's no overarching human rights instrument at the national level, as there is in relation to sex discrimination, disability, or race discrimination. We've identified in the last period of time that there are over 60 federal laws that discriminate against same-sex couples. Also, as you'd all be well aware, the amendment to the Marriage Act and the federal government's intervention in the ACT Civil Union Bill has signalled to the public their hardened approach to reform in the federal jurisdiction. And so that's the environment that we're moving into with the announcement last year that the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission would establish an inquiry into law reform at the federal level. So it's a difficult ask, but all power to Graham Innes, the Commissioner at Heriok, and his crew there for taking on a challenge not only of dealing with complex subject matter, but dealing with a difficult political environment. So what is the Same Sex, Same Entitlements Heriok Inquiry about? Well, it's about discrimination against same-sex couples regarding their access to financial and work-related entitlements. Well, it's important we understand that it's what we would call a narrow inquiry in the sense that it only relates to same-sex arrangements. It's not dealing with transgender issues and it's not dealing with issues relating to GLBT individuals. It's about same-sex couples and financial discrimination. It's not going to give rise to any overarching umbrella human rights instrument that I referred to earlier. It is a narrow inquiry looking at same-sex entitlements in relation to financial discrimination. But nonetheless, there are over 60 pieces of legislation that that this inquiry is focusing on. So it's looking at Commonwealth laws. It's also having a look at state and territory laws, but its focus is Commonwealth legislation. And a report has been drafted. Commissioner Innes has drafted a report from the inquiry and provided that to the Attorney-General, Philip Ruddock. And we're waiting on him now to table that in federal parliament. That will happen this month, we suspect by about the 20th of this month. There is a time limit from the time that he receives a report from the commission. This is a statutory arrangement. There's a time limit from when he receives the report to when that must be tabled in parliament. So later this month, we expect him to do that and to also indicate how the government will handle the recommendations of the inquiry. Okay, so what laws were Heriok interested in? Well, there's a long list. I said over 60, but it deals with things like taxation, social security, health issues like Medicare and pharmaceutical benefits, conditions of employment, pensions, retirement benefits, superannuation, veterans affairs entitlements, intestacy, which deals with people dying without wills, and so on. But as I mentioned before, it doesn't deal with broader issues relating to GLBT individuals and doesn't touch on transgender issues whatsoever. So what are some of the key issues that the inquiry is addressing? A key issue is how couples could be dealt with differently under federal law. There's essentially, within the parameters that the inquiry has to deal with, which set aside marriage, the inquiry is specifically not dealing with questions about marriage and not dealing with questions about civil union or registration schemes. While people will still campaign for those, this inquiry is not looking at them. So within the parameters of the inquiry, how could couples be better recognised in federal law? And clearly our preference would be, within those parameters, that de facto couple status be acknowledged for same-sex partners. A different model is of one called interdependency, where people are recognised as having financial and other kinds of dependencies on each other, without acknowledging the primacy of their couple relationship, simply that they have those dependencies. They might have lived with each other, they might have shared resources over time. And this could apply to people who are in committed, loving life relationships, but it could also apply to people who are friends. It could apply to people who've shared a car, who've shared a flat at some point, who've shared property, who've shared other sorts of resources as friends, or perhaps even just as colleagues in order to get some kind of mutual benefit. So these two models are being kicked around as ways in which federal law could recognise same-sex couples. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages with both options. In my case, I'm a gay man, I have a partner, I've been with him for 17 years. I'm 43, he's 40, we've been together since our 20s. As far as we're concerned, our relationship is a life relationship, it's a committed relationship. And under Queensland law, we're recognised as a de facto couple, just in the same way as a straight couple who aren't married but have those sorts of circumstances would be recognised as a de facto couple. It's not that complicated, or it shouldn't be. So this is one way that it could be taken forward. However, if that was the reform model, then the benefits to other people, like those I described before, friends who have shared interests and shared resources, would be left out of the reform. So how might you accommodate both the interests of people like myself who are clearly in a couple arrangement, or people who are in a different kind of arrangement where there are interdependencies? Perhaps we could incorporate both concepts. We could have a de facto and an interdependency allowance within federal law reform. Again, it doesn't seem to be that complex, but it is challenging for some. There's an old saying, let a thousand flowers bloom, and that's one that I adhere to and many of us adhere to, which is about choice. Why not have a whole range of relationship types that people could then choose from in order that those types might best fit their particular circumstances? So why not have a system in federal law that recognises interdependency, that recognises de facto, and I would go on to say that recognises people who want to attain marriage arrangements. But that's outside the parameters of this inquiry. So virtually all federal legislation includes a heterosexual de facto partner within the definition of spouse. There's no federal legislation which includes same-sex couples within the concept of a de facto couple, none whatsoever at the moment. Now, some of you might have been following what the opposition's been doing around these issues and noted that at the National Labor Conference earlier this year, they passed a resolution in support of a registry scheme for couples, for same-sex couples. So what if Labor win the federal election? How will this advance things? Well, that would be great for those same-sex couples that want to get registered, but there are those that don't. And as I said before, there should be options within state and territory and federal arrangements to recognise choice. So that in my case, just in the case of a heterosexual de facto arrangement, we could still have access to those de facto rights without getting registered, but if we chose to get registered, those should be available to us as well. So federal Labor, if they win, if they introduce those registry schemes, fantastic, but there should still be an emphasis on de facto reform for people who choose or prefer that method. Now, in relation to family matters, around 20% of lesbians and up to 10% of gay men have children. It's a fact of life. And for those of us in gay circles, as you all are, you probably know that there is a lesbian baby boom underway. In fact, I can't think of too many of my lesbian friends in couples who aren't, in fact, either planning to or having babies at the moment. It's phenomenal. However, children are when children are born into same-sex families, federal law provides no recognition of the relationship between the child and the non-biological parent. Married couples can use the family court for both property and child-related matters when their relationship breaks down, but same-sex couples are disadvantaged in that they can't do that. If they're included in family court matters, this would have the advantage that that would cover a larger pool of their shared assets, including superannuation. It would enable them to divide assets with a greater degree of flexibility and take into account a wider range of factors during and after the relationship and making any adjustments. So there's a whole range of ways in which access to the family court is important for those couples, as well as obviously the point about recognition. Just another example in the health area. Same-sex couples can't pool expenses to reach the family threshold for the safety net, for the Medicare safety net, or the extended safety net. Vicky Harding and her partner Jackie Brewer, who aren't in this picture, with their daughter Brenna, but some of you may know this couple from the infamous ABC Play School children's book story. They can't be considered a family for the purposes of the Medicare safety net. This means that they pay about a third more than a similar heterosexual family to reach the threshold when a subsidy kicks in. And Vicky said of this recently, "Some of the things I'm not going to know about until something goes wrong. Jackie is not on our Medicare card. Her partner is not on our Medicare card. I just don't know if people will honour our family in a medical situation." So there's the issue about financial discrimination and financial disadvantage, but there's also the symbolic discrimination, if you like, that unless there's formal forms of recognition, birth certificates or relationship certificates or simply on a Medicare card, then people can't have difficulty in demonstrating their relationship to authorities like health authorities or education authorities. Jim Wolfe, who is depicted here on the far your left, my right, of the picture, he's looking further ahead to the possibility of nursing home care. He and his partner, Andreas, of 19 years, are currently fit 49-year-olds, and they know that without changes to the Aged Care Act, they may suffer discrimination should any of them need to move into an aged care residence. Under the Act, the family home does not have to be sold to pay for the accommodation bond if a spouse or heterosexual de facto partner is still living in it, but a gay partner is not given the same protection. Another story, this one from Jairo Takemisawa, who's on the far, my left, your right side of the picture, who's recently been in the press quite a bit in relation to this case. Jairo nursed his partner of 20 years, a World War II veteran, Jack George. He nursed him through years of illness before Mr. George passed away. The 47-year-old worked night shifts to look after Mr. George, who'd had serious heart problems connected with his war service, and Jairo eventually gave up full-time work altogether to do this nursing. When Mr. George died after a heart attack, Mr. Takemisawa, who had moved from Japan to live with his partner, obtained permanent residency on the basis of the pair's relationship and applied for a war widow's pension. All sounds great. He was shocked one day, one Friday, when he received a letter from the Veterans Affairs Department approving the pension. He was actually surprised. He didn't expect to get it. But the letter was addressed to Ms. Jairo Takemisawa, not Mr. And so not wanting to obtain this benefit dishonestly, he phoned the department and explained that he wasn't a woman, he was a man, and that he was in a same-sex relationship. The following Monday, as the matter was actually being raised in Parliament, there was a courier at his door with a letter asking for his veteran's gold card and his pension to be returned. He was simply not eligible as a same-sex partner for the benefit that a heterosexual partner of a veteran would receive. So why do we think change is important? Well, on the face of it, removing discrimination we think is an obvious progressive move forward. We think that Australian laws should reflect the aspirations of citizens. So not only the aspirations for fairness, but the aspirations for equity. We believe that laws can shape and respond to public opinion. So there's been growing acceptance of same-sex relationships and GLBT people in Australian society. Our social values, attitudes, surveys over time have shown that that's true, that there is a move towards acceptance of our lifestyles and of our relationships in the Australian community. By no means is there a majority or a dominant view in favour of our lifestyles or of our rights, but certainly a solid and general trend that we expect to continue over time and eventually to achieve a majority status within this society, that we are accepted as a part of the citizenry and that we should have equal laws. So the current government can respond to that growing trend and respond to public opinion, but it can also shape it. It's a duty upon our government, I believe, to protect those that are disadvantaged and to ensure equity. So both in responding and shaping opinion, they need to take action. And in addition, there are laws that Australia has signed up internationally that deal with international human rights obligations. So the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission is, in a way, a product of our signatory and our participation in the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which requires the nations who sign up to it to protect all persons, that all persons are equal before the law and entitled without any discrimination to the equal protection of the law. Now, that doesn't specify GLBT issues, but it creates a principle that Australia has signed up to, that all people should be equal before the law. And we believe that it's time the federal government enacted that principle in relation to GLBT issues. So there's a question about what you can do as a group. What could PFLAG do as a group, or what could individuals do? Now, none of this is rocket science, but it is important to let your MPs and senators know that if you do support removal of discrimination in federal law, that you want them to take that step. We've heard recently from advisers to the Attorney General, Philip Ruddock, that they're not getting a strong sense from the public that the public wants this change. So we need to tell them if that's what we want. We need to let them know. We need to let our reps know, our representatives know, and we need to let the ministers and the Prime Minister know. So you can do that by visiting your representative or writing to them, emailing them. All those details are reasonably available to us now over the internet. You can also get yourself on talkback radio shows and write letters to the editor. It's another way of letting the Prime Minister, the Attorney General and MPs know that there is a public mood for change around these issues. We don't expect that this issue is going to be a lead issue in relation to the federal election. There are many issues that are scrambling for attention within that domain. But as we await the public release of the Heriot Inquiry report, we know that that's a golden opportunity to at least create a space in the public dialogue, in public debate. It mightn't last that long, but if we create a significant space within the public dialogue, then we can at least get a message across to MPs and to ministers that they do need to act, that there is a public mood for change. And of course, recruiting others to join you will also help achieve that. And why bother? Will anything change? Well, I take heart from the place where we inherited our political system, our system of democracy, the UK, that indeed change can happen. So if they can do it, we can. The UK Civil Partnership Act, which does deal with unions, an issue that we are campaigning for and yet it remains outside of the parameters of the inquiry, if that can be achieved within recent times in the UK with positive support and, dare I say, no crumbling of the state and no crumbling of UK families, then I believe it can be done here in Australia. It's a matter of political will, and we have to let our politicians know that there is a mood and a need for change. Thanks.